I am Plato on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Rafe Mayer joins me again, the broadcaster and writer, former lawyer and cabinet minister, has written a new book, The Home Stretch. It came out of the television series he's done, The Search, which you can still see on Joy TV in these parts. The book is about religion, and it is one layman's look at a number of religions as he looks for answers about life, death, the afterlife, the devil, God, heaven, and hell. The book is available at Amazon.com in a Kindle edition. It's only $9.99. It's a cogent, thoughtful, and thought-provoking look at life, and the examination of these various religions is most interesting and informative. His website is at rafeonline.com. There's also thecanadian.org. When Damien Gillis's colleague at the Common Sense Canadian was on recently, I noted that Mr. Mayer has been the most frequent guest on this program. This is his 10th appearance. Please welcome back to the Plato Online program, Rafe Mayer. Good morning, Mr. Mayer.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm delighted that I'm the most used of your guests anytime.
Yes, yes. And there was a roast for you a couple weeks ago, and I saw you there. It was just a great event. You haven't turned 80 yet, but you had this roast, right?
Yeah, next week. Well, actually, the 31st of December. Well, it was great. And, you know, one thing I found funny, Joe, is, as I said to my wife going home, there are people in there tonight that a year ago would rather have been caught in a house of ill repute than be caught at this kind of a meeting. I mean, we had a lot of people there that were by no means the typical NDPers.
No, and there were people there that said that they hated you 20 years ago, a year ago even. I had such great fun there. I was at the back of the room standing next to Jim Sinclair most of the evening. You had the feeling that there was a lot of love for you. I mean, what's that like?
Well, it was very, it was extraordinary. I've done, you know, lots of public speaking in my time, and I've had people applaud and people boo. But I just felt, and this is going to sound awfully corny, Joe, but I'm going to say it anyway, I just felt a sense of love in the place. I really did.
Yeah.
And even when I used a four-letter word, it didn't seem to bother anybody. It was a glorious evening, and so many of the so-called roasters were so good, and it was just great.
Yeah, yeah. So the title of this new book, The Home Stretch, suggests that you're in the home stretch of your own life now. I mean, you're 80. Is that how you feel? Is that how you look at life today?
Well, you know, I thought about a title for it, and I thought, you know, the home stretch, if you go to the races, is really probably, it's a pretty long stretch. Yeah, you know, you're by no means out of it yet, but you can see the finish line. And I think that's how I feel. I'm not over yet. I'm still as active as I've ever been. But I'd be fooling myself if I didn't say, well, you know, Rafe, in all likelihood, you're in the last decade of your life giving yourself the best of it. So it wasn't a gloomy title, Joe. It was just one that seemed to reflect where I was sitting right now as, you know, coming around the far turn, heading for home, and there were all the people there, and, you know, so on and so forth. And I felt that that was probably the right title for it, for the way I felt.
But you set out in this book to ask questions about your life and what happens afterwards. Is that what happens afterwards? Is that something that people should be thinking about, do you think?
I think it's something that everybody does think about, even if they don't admit it. I think when you get to be about 8 or 9 or 10 and one of your grandparents dies, it's the first time you confront the fact that you're going to have to die yourself. You go as quickly as you can into denial after your mother pats you on the head. But I think for the rest of your life, you wonder, you know, I wonder what it's like. What should I be doing? Should I be doing anything? Is religion the way to go? And if so, what religion? And that sort of thing. And I honestly can say this, Joe. People say they don't do that. I don't think you're telling the truth. I think that's just a very human thing. You know you're here for a good time, not a long time. And you have to wonder whether there's anything on afterwards. And if so, what it is.
And so what are you looking for?
Well, I think I'm still, I'm looking for answers in the sense of is there a heaven and or is there an afterlife and what is that like? But I've answered the question that troubled me the most, and that was, you know, what sort of religion should I come at this with or any religion at all? And I grew up an Anglican, which is about as easy as it gets for a Protestant religion, as you know, or a pretty free and easy group. And I'd always puzzled over a number of things, and I thought to myself, why do I have to learn all this stuff, this catechism and so on? Why does it matter? And when I did the research for this book, I got to the famous passages, I think they're Mark and Luke, where Jesus is trying to outwit the or the lawyer is trying to outwit Jesus by saying, "What laws do I obey?" And Jesus said, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God, etc. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, and thou shalt love neighbor as thyself. Really, three things, because you must love your neighbor, love God, and you must love yourself. And but everybody misses the next line, which is he says, upon this commandment hang all the law and the prophets." Well, that I sort of think about that, and that Jesus wasn't one for wasting words. But, well, now what the hell does that mean? And it meant to me that if you agree with these three commandments, you do your very best to live up to them, that's all you can do. And that other stuff, forgiveness if it's going to offend anybody, but it's mumbo-jumbo. Whether Jesus was God or he ascended into heaven, why he wanted a body in heaven, I don't know, or any of these other things, is just absolutely extraneous. And if you can concentrate on the things that Jesus said and try your best to see to me that that's what the obligation was. And there was one other point on that, Joe. I don't think Jesus was talking to the scribes and the Pharisees and the educated folk in Israel at that time. He was talking to very ordinary people, and he was giving them things that they could understand. Now, I don't think that Jesus was saying to that group, if you don't believe that I walked on water, or if you don't believe that I ascend bodily into heaven, or if you don't believe that I'm God, etc., you're out of here. I don't think that was what he was saying at all. He was saying, look, here are the simple articles of faith. Follow them as best you can, and I'll forgive you when you go wrong, but that's what your obligations are. So that's what I finally came away from the whole exercise with, Joe.
So when you think about what heaven looks like or what heaven is, you obviously did some research of these various religions and what they consider heaven to be. What do you think it is?
Well, that's a very good question. I didn't come away at all satisfied with that. I believe there is a life there hereafter. When I say life, I don't mean necessarily we're all going to be up in clouds plucking harps, but there's something that happens afterwards. I'm not quite sure what it was, and I did quite an examination of the spirit world, and remarkably, a lot of the writers that talk about that do say there is a spirit world, et cetera, et cetera, but they don't define it as exactly what it is. So I'm as much in the dark on that as I ever was. I'm much less in the dark on hell, however. Anybody who reads Revelation will know it's about the scariest book ever written, and that will give you all you need to know and more about hell.
Yeah, and so do you believe in, how credible is the idea that we come back as, say, ghosts or spirits?
Well, I think that we certainly are going to be something after death. The atheist would tell you that, it's just you're gone, and that's the end of it, no matter what you say, but I don't believe that. I've talked to too many doctors and nurses and priests who have been in rooms where people have died and have actually felt something happen. There's so much of the after-death, not after-death, of course, not real death, but you know what I mean, when a person apparently dies and they go and see the white light and all the rest of it. There's so much of those experiences that I believe thoroughly that there is some kind of existence. Just what it is, I haven't yet found out.
Now, you have had experiences with seeing ghosts and spirits. Your daughter, Sean, who we've talked about before, she died. You talked to people that talked to her, was it?
Yes, indeed. It stays with me to this day, of course. My daughter, Sean, was killed back in 1976 in a car accident. And a few days later, I saw one of her boyfriends. I don't mean a lover type of boyfriend, just one of her friends at school. And he said, "Mr. Mayor, do you mind if I talk to you about Sean?" And I said, "No, of course I don't." He said, "Well, I talked to Sean after she died, and she said to tell my parents that I'm sorry, but that I'm happy." And, it was a bit of a jolt. I didn't really pay an awful lot more attention to that until, I would think probably 2, 3, 4 months later. I was conscious that somebody was trying to see me. At that time, I was an MLA, and I would come back every 2 weeks or so to my office, and I just had a sense that somebody was trying to see me and that my people would let her in. So I got a hold of my people. I said, "I want to talk to this lady and see what's on her mind." So she came in, and she came from a part of the greater Kamloops area, far, far away from the young man, and they had no contact at all. And she said, "I don't know you. I never knew your daughter, Sean, and I'm what you call a psychic. But I talked to your daughter, Sean, after she was dead, and she said, tell my mom and dad that I'm sorry, but that I'm happy." Now, the exact same words from these two different sources, and I know cynics will say, "Oh, well, these two probably knew each other." Well, they didn't know each other. It's just as simple as that. And so that made me believe that that Sean was still in existence. In what form, I don't know.
And then there was the ghost that you saw in your house, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure by this time people have me certified. But I was sound asleep one night, and all of a sudden I was conscious of somebody being in the room, and I sort of got half out of bed, and I could see this lady standing there. And I was just starting to talk to her and ask her what she was doing there, and I just reaching over to turn on the full light. We have a bit of light in the hallway anyway, so I could see her. Turn on the full light, and she just disappeared. And it was quite a story, or quite a feeling. Now, Wendy, my wife, was talking to some neighbors about this experience sometime later, and one of the ladies who lived in an adjacent complex to ours said, "Well, would Rafe recognize this woman again?" And so Wendy asked me. I said, "Yes, I think I would." So she presented a picture of about 8 or 10 different people, obviously all at a party, and said, "Do you see this lady?" And I said, "Yes, I do. There, she's right there. That's her." And she said, "Well, she lived in your place, and she committed suicide at the bathroom just outside your house." I thought, "Oh my gracious, this is a bit much." But I said, "The one thing that I don't understand, when I saw her, she was like in the picture, but she had a strange hat on." And the lady said, "Well, she was a nurse. She was wearing her nurse's cap from the hospital and she graduated." And then that made full sense. Now, that was the last of it. It only lasted 10 or 15 seconds, but people will say, "Well, Rafe, you must be off your rocker." I said, "Look, I was there and it happened, and that's that."
Yeah. Did you know that someone had committed suicide in your apartment?
No. No idea at all. I never heard of that at all. Yeah. The only people I knew in the apartment are the townhouse with the people we bought from, and well, it wasn't them.
So thinking about your daughter, Sean, and thinking about the woman that lived there before, they're dead. Where do you think they are, and why do you think they're coming back?
This is the great puzzlement, Joe, and I've thought about this long and hard. They are somewhere. Of that, I have no doubt. Where they are, I don't know. As you know in the book, I even get into quarks and parallel universes and so on, and yeah, in the attempt to find out where this is all happening. And I think the book that does explain it, except I don't even understand it myself. So somebody who understands quarks and quantum physics, et cetera, might get the answer. But I just believe that there's more, in our space than just what we see. I think there is a parallel universe, or whatever you might want to call it, that's very, very close to us. Why people reappear and so on, I just don't know.
See, I'm thinking if I end up in heaven, and I'm wondering if you think the same.
A very unlikely prospect.
Probably not, no. So if that happens, and I'm there, why would I want to come back? Or why would I want if it's such a great place, why would I want to see people or see the new tenants or whatever?
Well, that is the great puzzlement, Joe, and everybody who has seen apparitions or ghosts or whatever, I think, asks themselves the same question. Why are you here, and what are you otherwise doing? And I can't answer that at all, other than to say that I have lots of people in the book that speculate on that. But as to myself, I just think, as I'm sitting here talking to you, Joe, in my office, that there are other spirits and things in the office, and that if they have the mind to do it, they could appear. Why they would want to appear, I don't know. I have prayed many times that Sean would reappear so I could talk to her instead of the lady and her friend.
Yeah.
But it just has not happened.
Is God a man?
I don't think that God is a person. I think that's an Old Testament vision. But I don't know what he or she looks like. I come to this conclusion, Joe, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here, that there is something out there, a creator of some sort. There is a power, there's a force. As a matter of fact, there may be more than one. I don't think that monotheism is necessarily the way that one should go. The Greeks and the Romans and present-day Hindus have more than one God, and so I don't exclude that idea. I think there is a God, there is a spirit. Now, what I also think is that while the atheists would poo-poo that, and they would say, "Well, if there's a God, who made God?" The counter question to that is, if there was an explosion of a matter of the size of a golf ball, it became the universe, where did it come from? Where did the universe come from? Where did the oxygen come from? Where did the fire come from? So I think both religion and science have reached exactly the same chasm, and we simply are not mentally equipped to be able to reach that chasm. It's something we're just going to have to wait and see on.
And when you look at God and his role in life, and I shouldn't say his, because you don't think it's a person. When you think of God's role, and people talk about coincidences and fate and the sword, and then there's the aspect of the free will that people have. How do you explain things like tsunamis and earthquakes and even evil people like, Hitler or Clifford Olson?
Well, that, of course, is the great question, isn't it? Why would God permit little children to be molested and killed by madmen? You just can't answer that question. It's the great mystery. It's probably the best thing the atheist has going for him, because he will say, or she will say, if there's a loving God, why do all of these things happen? I don't know. I suspect my own theory would be that the great power, God or whatever, created the universe, created the challenges, created all these difficulties, and nevertheless offered a reward afterwards. But that, that does not make sense, and I don't pretend that it does. I'm just as buffaloed now by that as I was before I started. I do know one thing.
Yeah.
We have been blaming God, whatever you wish to call him or her, for a lot of things which we shouldn't be doing. And that's because churches, needing a priest, needing somebody that can get a hold on people, have put together all these theories and these doctrines and all the rest of it that only they can understand and explain. Therefore, you all have to go to that church or you're not going to go to heaven. I think that is absolute sheer rubbish, and I'm sorry that I can't put it in a politer way.
Yeah. It's sort of like, I remember hearing Mike Huckabee one time talk about whether or not Jews go to heaven or not, and he couldn't say one way or the other, but he said that his church was probably the best way in terms of, like, if you have to go downtown to Vancouver, there's probably, six different routes that one can take, and his was the closest. I mean, is that what religions, how we differentiate these religions, do you think?
Yes, I think it is, and I can't hear you very well, Joe, but I'll answer that question. I think that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
And, it seems to me that you don't need any of them. I think you could create your own church. Now, you can use that as an excuse. People say as they get up with a hangover on Sunday morning, I get my church by going out and sitting on the lawn and reading,
yeah,
and all those sorts of things. But I don't think that you have to join doctrine in order to find, your way through life. The doctrine, I think, as I said before, is mostly rubbish that priests preach in order to justify their existence. And I know that's pretty harsh on priests. They do an awful lot of very, very good things, including my priest. But I don't think that anybody has to believe all of that stuff that's in the Bible.
How religious are you, Rafe?
Well, Michael, how you'd answer that? Certainly as I get older, I feel a greater concern about the afterlife, but in other ways, I feel a sense of peace. And I think in a way, Joe, and this may be just self-hypnosis, I would agree to that if anybody said that to me, but I think that since I have found those statements by Jesus about loving God, the neighbor, etc., I have felt much more at peace and much more confident that if there is anything after death, that I'm going to be there on the good side of it because I have tried to do those things. And I used to worry, Rafe, if you don't believe in the bodily ascension of Jesus, and you don't believe, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. I no longer feel that. I now feel that even if it's true, and an all-powerful God can make anything happen, but even if it's true, I don't think it's necessary. I think Jesus is telling us that's not necessary. You just simply have to follow these simple rules, which are not easy to follow, but you keep your attention on those and don't worry about other stuff.
Now, we're reading this book differently than we otherwise would. Compared to your other books. Did you have to write it differently, or how was that like?
I don't think so, Joe. It is different, no question about that, although I did one on fly fishing, which is a lot different than politics.
Yeah.
I found that I was so fascinated, and I asked myself, look, if you're going to write a book on religion, do you have to do it from a theological sort of point of view? Do you have to study this in terms of going to various philosophers and so on? I thought, no. I'm no good at that anyway. What I think I am good at is taking a look at a set of circumstances and putting it down on paper so people can read it and enjoy it or be challenged by it. And that's exactly how I felt. I felt so challenged by all of the research that I had done. It was all sitting there. I thought there must be a way that I could articulate how that has got me thinking certain ways and offering it to people and see whether they think that's not a bad thing themselves, to examine all this and see where you come out. Now, There are shortcomings, too. I did very little on Islam, you'll note. Mm-hmm. I did that really because most of the interesting stuff that I did on air had to do with various different brands of Christianity. I don't mean to put down Muslims at all. It's just that didn't seem to be something that, that cropped up in my research.
So you turn 80 on the 31st. What are your plans for the big 80th birthday? Are you traveling? Or?
Yes, we're Wendy and I are in the Caribbean on the 31st of December. It's hard to have these big birthdays when you live as far away from your kids and your grandkids and great grandkids, I might say, as I do.
Really?
And so I think to ease their pain at what they should do on Papa's 80th birthday. And also to make it nice and easy for us that Wendy and I just thought, wouldn't that be nice to just be out in the sun? And there we are.
Yeah, it's been nice talking again. This is such a great book, and happy birthday again, Rafe.
Thank you very much, Joe. Anytime you'd like to talk with me, I'd love to talk with you.
The same. The book is called The Home Stretch. It's available at Amazon.com. The Kindle edition is only $9.99. Do download it. It's a fascinating book. Just you'll be thinking about it weeks after reading it, as I have been. RafeOnline.com is a website. There's also the Canadian.org. Rafe Mayer on the line from Lions Bay in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.